All right, you're back in the DFSR, and we're here with our daily NFL podcast for Thursday, August 25th. I am Doug Norrie. That is
James Davis.
And we are going to talk, you know, we're in full preseason mode of football, soon to be in full regular season mode of football, so a very exciting time. We're going to spend the next few podcasts over this week and the next week breaking down different positions that we can look at and sort of where we should get our brain moving in terms of, you know, quarterback, running back, blah, 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 blah. We're from dailyfantasysportsrankings.com, DFSR.com for short. Head over to our site, grab a free 3-day trial to our projection system powered by Lineup Lab that right now is going to allow you to see all of our projections for week one NFL, along with a player lab that's going to analyze trends and allow you to filter and filter in and out different players based on different criteria that you can have. And that's free for that's free for 2 weeks now, $29.95 a month after that. And that 2-week free trial will take you all the way through week one of football season. So you go in there now, you get it, you're good through week one. And that also includes MLB projections from now until that time also.
Just because we're such nice guys, dude.
Super nice guys. And from now all the way through. So all under one umbrella, $29.95 a month after that. All right, dude. We are putting out a series of sort of positional primers coming, starting today and then going through next week, where we're going to take a look at each different position and sort of get your brain wired, we think, correctly around how you should think about these different positions when it comes to daily fantasy sports. So the first one we're going to start off with is quarterback. We have a free ebook on the site that breaks down sort of our general bird's eye view thoughts on setting daily fantasy lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings. And you took the quarterback session and sort of expanded on it in the post that's going to go up today. Give me some of your maybe some bird's eye thoughts on quarterback, and then we'll sort of start to drill down into what we can specifically look at for each individual guy.
Yeah, we'll do. So first, a note on just trying to analyze different positions in football in general. Those of you who are coming from baseball have experienced this a little bit in trying to project pitchers and hitters, which are obviously completely different, but football really has another layer on top of that in terms of the different process for trying to figure out who's a good play at which position. Now, obviously, you have a whole week to prepare in most cases, so you should have the time to do the research that you need to do, but guys that are good quarterbacks aren't going to necessarily, you know, be on the same team as guys who are good running back plays. In fact, they may be opposites from each other. Obviously, you have to project defenses and in some cases kickers as well, so there's really, really quite a bit of diversity in terms of exactly the process needed to come up with both safe plays for cash games, 50-50s and double-ups, and also for big tournaments. So this is a series I'm very excited to do. And also, you know, it's a little bit overwhelming in some ways because there really is just so many different factors. In particular with football as well, there's also this issue of kind of an information war where we have more information now than we ever did with football, but there's still a lot of opaqueness around stuff like, you know, defensive quality in particular. Like, who really knows who the good defenses are outside of, you know, total points allowed, you know, and who can judge like how many fluke plays led to touchdowns versus just, you know, getting ground down because you don't have the personnel, you know, trying to take into consideration what happens when certain guys are injured, like what happens when this left guard is injured on a given NFL team. It actually is quite difficult to kind of balance all the contextual information and come up with good projections. So that's like just a disclaimer I want to throw out there before we get into our positional series altogether, understanding that football is really, really difficult.
Well, and it's funny too, because people see football as both difficult and easy because, and we, I think, mentioned this in the last podcast, but and I'm sure we're going to mention this all the way throughout the season, but football is the most popular sport, and therefore people feel like they have their finger the most on the pulse with football, and it's probably true, but the problem is when everyone has their finger on the pulse, then where's your edge, right? So, you know, we all know all of the players that start, and we all have a basic, I would say, general sense of the talent level and, you know, just how good a certain player is or a certain team is. Everyone kind of knows that in football. Everyone has a fantasy football team. Everyone has a season-long team. Everyone has the whole week to sort of dive into football. And so everyone, from that plane, football is easy but difficult at the same time, if that makes sense.
Well, yeah, and I would argue that, you know, unless you have a very strong intellectual self-defense, you can also run afoul of just hearing a bunch of wrong stuff. Right. You know, like you go to a barbecue, Labor Day barbecue coming up, and you hear about, you know, your uncle telling about how the Jets defense is really going to turn it around this year, or like, you know, how RG3 looked great in training camp or something. And you might subconsciously take that stuff seriously, even though it's just completely worthless. You know?
Right.
So, the information overload is a real problem, I think. And that's where having a good process around each position can kind of pull you out of just like, I know this happens to me. I know better. And inevitably I'll be doing, you know, maybe I'll be checking the so-called experts at ESPN and their rankings for the week, and I'll hear some little tidbit that, you know, such and such a guy is against this new cornerback and, you know, it might be a good matchup for him. And I know that I'll bring it up when we're talking setting lineups on Sunday. And I know that it's probably incorrect to do that, but you just can't help yourself, you know? So,
well, we ran into this problem last year with football, I think specifically because, and I again mentioned this in the last podcast, but we began modeling in a slightly different way last year, and our projections ended up being slightly different than those talking heads on ESPN or NFL Network, or even actually just different than other people in the daily fantasy space. And it really threw me off because I'm like, well, which is it? Because we're super high on, you know, X player this week. No one else seems to have them ranked anywhere close. Who's correct? And I, you know, in the end, when we ran regressions, we were correct more than we were incorrect on those things. So, but it took really a whole season of NFL for me to even trust what we were doing. And I know that's not the best salesy technique, but just from a point of honesty, it just having so much information thrown at you, and when you're just even a little bit different than what maybe industry consensus is, it can make you question whether or not what you're doing is correct. And I don't know. So there's even when you have a system, it's still tough to evaluate against the masses, I would say.
Well, I remember there, one week in particular, we were really down on Tony Romo. This was going in the second week of the season last year. They were playing the Eagles, and we specifically had a conversation because we had him like as the 24th overall quarterback, and you know the guys on ESPN or Yahoo or someplace had him as like 7th in their consensus, right. And we were like, should we just move him up to like 14th? Like no one will play him still, but it just won't look as bad if like he actually winds up being good. Like people think this is a good matchup with the Eagles. Like, I don't know. And we went back and forth, and ultimately I think we did hedge a little bit, or we just like looked and talked ourselves into, you know, moving one goalpost a little bit here or there. And then he was just awful, had like 200 yards and no touchdowns, you know. Like,
well, that happened every week.
A stellar call. And we got too cowardly, but I think we learned to trust it.
Yes.
You know, as time kept going, because I think the big thing too, and this is, you know, we haven't gotten into quarterbacks yet, but this is all, I think, really, really useful given how far out we are still are from the season, is it's simply worthless to go look at season-long leagues, even their weekly rankings, because you think that a good process would be, man, you know, and I don't want to pick on these guys because, you know, they do a lot of good analysis, but man, these guys on Yahoo, like, they're doing a weekly ranking, like, who you should play in your given matchup. So, of course, this would be just fine to use for DFS purposes. And you start to make a formula around, like, you know, Scott Pianowski or other guys that are quite smart, Andy Behrens, you know, those guys. But you can't, their incentives are totally different than ours in the DFS space because they have one key consideration that they can ignore, which is salary. So for them, it doesn't matter if they're right around those top five guys, right? Because in a given week, you're not deciding between Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady in a season-long league. But in DFS, you're always deciding between everyone. So you just cannot use guys who are in these season-long scenarios because the incentives are not there, and they never get angry emails for guessing, or they don't get the right kind of angry emails when they incorrectly guess between Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady. You know, so that is where guys in the DFS space, even if it's not us, where you just have to start at least with DFS rankings specific to that and just totally ignore anyone who's coming from a season-long perspective. Sounds harsh. Those guys know football. They watch a lot of film, but they just don't. They don't care about it as much as we do, frankly. So that's my little speech on that.
Yeah, I'm totally with you. And that's what the thing that makes it most difficult to just evaluate on a weekly basis is, what are the metrics you're going to use? What are the inputs you're going to use? Do you have everything weighted correctly in terms of a system? Because if you don't have a system and you don't have weights and metrics to analyze these things, it's just simply too difficult to it's not even difficult. It's impossible to generate, you know, just projections or just even have a clear sense. And I'm talking mostly cash games here because I think you can get away from this a little bit when it comes to running tournament lineups. But for just cash games and looking to finish better than 50% of the field or 40% of the field with rake, you need some kind of system. You need some kind of inputs to be able to evaluate these things. And I think that's, so let's go through where our system is sort of picking those things out. What are some of the things that you think when you're evaluating a quarterback and when you're looking at his overall projection, what are the things that you kind of go to first in terms of, you know, let's just, we'll talk quote safety to start.
Well, yeah. And I think it's worth noting, kind of giving that overview of the quarterback that you mentioned earlier, and I didn't really jump into. I gave you more of an overview of just generally the process of trying to find good players. It's worth noting, and we talk about this in the articles in the ebook, and I'm sure we'll talk about it throughout the season, but quarterbacks, generally speaking, have the least variance from week to week in terms of their performance of any of the major positions in daily fantasy sports, so like exempting kickers or whatever. And this is for a number of reasons, but the most high-level, easy one to understand is that they just have the ball in their hands so much. And the way it works out generally each season is the more plays you're involved in, the less variance you have in terms of your performance, because kind of duh, right? Like if you're, I mean, it makes sense, but like if you're a quarterback and you average 35 passes per week, but 1 week you have 40, you know, five more whole passes, well, that's only 1/7 more than you did normally, right? But if you're a wide receiver and you normally catch 8 balls per week and 1 week you catch 13 or 3, those are really, really dramatic swings. So generally speaking, quarterbacks tend to be the most projectable or the most quote-unquote safe. Running backs tend to come in second. And then, you know, top-tier wide receivers after that. And top-tier wide receivers can flirt with, you know, as projectable as yes. some of the regular running back guys. And then generally speaking, tight ends, especially in the non-Gronk category, tend to be the most erratic. So right away with quarterback, we're starting with the most projectable position. And from there, what you really need to do is just figure out what your goals are in a given contest. So you mentioned for cash games, if you're going for safety at the quarterback position, I mean, it's a very, very quick and dirty way to do it, but oftentimes just starting with price, usually the most expensive guys are often the most safe. And we'll get into some of the specific factors that can influence you from there. Because, you know, again, you'll be choosing between every quarterback in football that's playing in a given week. But generally speaking, you know, if you're looking for safety writ large, then you want to be spending up at quarterback. Because, again, you can invest the highest amount of dollars at the safest position and kind of get away from it without taking on too much unnecessary risk. So that's the general overview. Prioritize quarterbacks in safe formats. And then, you know, when you're trying to pick between the safest of the safe, there are a number of other different considerations. So to start, I always like to look at just simply game totals. You know, it's another very, very obvious one, but the guys in Vegas have been doing this a long time. We talked about incentives where the season-long fantasy forecasters have very little to lose if they're incorrect. Aside from a couple angry tweets, the guys in Vegas have a lot to lose when they're incorrect. It's like right. millions of dollars. Football is the most gambled on sport in the United States and, you know, second most in the world, I think, or maybe the most. It's up there with the Premier League in England. But yeah, football, people are just gambling on football all the time, and they need to be really, really spot on with these totals, or they'll just get hammered by the sharps. So that's a great place to start. Of course, the obvious thing there is the more points scored in a game, the more points your team will score, the more plays the quarterback will be involved in that can involve scoring. So it's a, you know, very, very straightforward thing to start with.
And just as a note about that, with correlations, right? So I've been doing this, what I've been doing for like the last week is just running correlations for NFL. And one of the correlations that, you know, a high correlation from last season. So I only went back one season. That's probably not the best process, but would have liked to just go back probably 3 seasons worth to really get these numbers strict. But the data set that I have was for last season. The last season, the correlation between fantasy, between quarterback fantasy points and the team implied total. So how many points did Vegas imply that they were going to have right, between the over-under and the spread? It was a 0.64 correlation. And while not a one-to-one correlation on the graph, 0.64 is when you're talking about fantasy and just looking at the different things beforehand that you can correlate, right? So like obviously total passing attempts for a quarterback is highly correlated with fantasy for the same reasons as before. Yep. But we don't know what those are going to be before the game starts, right? So afterwards, it runs a pretty good correlation. This 0.64 correlation between those things strikes me as about as strong as you'll see from a number that you know ahead of time, right? And if you can just grab a team, if you can grab a quarterback from a high total, then that is really just be the way to go. Again, duh, they're going to score the most points. But sometimes those things don't always, like for instance, the same correlation didn't exist for running backs or for wide receivers, really, to the same degree. So anyway, that is, if you're looking at just a quick and dirty way to get out of it, look at a team implied total before the week starts.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, to that same end, I think we can also look at the spread in a given game. I write about this in the ebook and in the article, and I think it's just worth giving a minute or two to hear as well. Generally speaking, we want games with thin spreads. So I'm talking, 3.5 points or less. Those games, obviously, Vegas is predicting them not to be blowouts. And one possession games in particular are of particular interest because essentially, as teams go through, they're very likely just to continue to play their normal offensive set and not adjust their strategy based on maintaining a big lead or trying to chase down a big deficit. So the way this normally plays out is, teams are going back and forth, trading scores. Like I noticed for week one, the Saints and the Raiders have a high total and a one spread. They have the highest total and the thinnest spread of the week. So look out for that game to be a hugely chalk game in terms of the good players. But so what that means is, so Breeze and Carr are trading touchdown passes. We get to the fourth quarter. Neither team wants to sit around because they know the other team's offense is capable of scoring on them. And so they pretty much stick with the plan. Thin spreads, therefore, oftentimes very much correlate with safety because, teams aren't going to change the game plan dramatically as often as they would in games where, they're up by 13 points. On the same token, though, high spreads and so being heavily favored or heavily underdogged can indicate higher upside in some cases. So, the Patriots are kind of the classic example of this where, say, they're favored by 13.5 points over a team with a bad defense but a reasonable offense. Picture maybe like the Eagles 2 years ago or something. Now, in games like that, yeah, sure, sometimes they're going to blow the Eagles out and the starters are going to rest in the fourth, or they're just going to be running LeGarrette Blount or Deion Lewis or whoever their starter is over and over and just kind of closing out the game. But sometimes the other team runs hot, and it is a one-possession game. And now, if it's a one-possession game, it's not because the other team's defense rose to the challenge. It's because, they randomly got some, special teams touchdowns or, long passes or whatever. And in those games, you'll often find, especially the top-tier quarterbacks, will put up their biggest totals. It's just that sometimes, again, they just wind up handing off for the whole second half. And then in the other category, you get the big underdog guys. So, Blake Bortles was the classic example of this last year, where he threw 29 of his 35 passes, passing touchdowns from behind. So, again, sometimes you're just down by so much the other defense knows you're going to pass, and it's not as safe as it seems to be. Even though you're passing a lot, your passes aren't worth as many fantasy points per pass as they might be if the other team has to respect the run. But yeah, you can get upside on both sides of those big spread games.
Yeah, and it's interesting. I actually said before about things that correlated well to fantasy output was I mentioned actually passing attempts when I was mentioning the Vegas implied total as being correlative. That was actually incorrect. So the correlation between total pass attempts in a game and total fantasy points for a quarterback was only 0.37. So this is like one of those after the fact stats that
sure, and I think you're being a little hard on yourself. That's still a positive correlation and should be, treated with some regard.
No.
It's not as strong as the other factors, is what you're saying.
I kind of had said that it was more correlated, but it was incorrect. So while you were talking, I went back and just looked at the correlations I had run, and that was 0.37. Yep. But that makes sense, right? So just because not all passes are thrown the same, and so those same quarterbacks that are throwing more passes in a game because and their team stinks and they're playing down, well, though. A pass thrown in a game where you're losing is just not the same as a pass thrown when you're winning or when the game's tied or when everyone's sort of playing on the same field. So you'll get these big bumps for bad quarterbacks that throw a ton of passes, but then they just, where do they go? They go nowhere, right? And they're negative EV passes in general. So
they're throwing underneath the prevent defense. So, it's 7 yard outs and stuff like that.
Right. So you're just not getting, you're not always going to get safety from volume. You'll get some.
Yeah, but generally speaking, we're hoping for upside in those cases, right? Like you would never look at a team that's a negative 13.5 underdog and say, oh, well, hey, at least they'll be passing a lot. So therefore, I'll play this guy in my cash game because, you also sometimes don't know why the big spread is there. Like you know, a lot of times teams that are that big of an underdog, it's because they turn the ball over a lot. You know, there's a lot that can go wrong.
And what this is,
I think it's definitely worth looking at for big tournaments.
And what this is also not correlated to is the price of said quarterback. So the, you know, you will get some value, you will get some safety and volume from a quarterback that's $5,000 because they're just not the $9,000 quarterback like Rodgers or Cam Newton or something like that. So where this correlation is spread across all price tiers equally, and that isn't always the most informative thing either, because you know a Blake Bortles at $6,500 who gets increased volume, even though his success in this correlation is relative to, you know, an Aaron Rodgers or Cam Newton performance, it's not relative to all their prices. So I still think there's,
and you're not going to get Bortles at $6,500.
I'm just kind of,
but you could last season at some point.
Right, exactly. And you will, there are some guys in there that you will be able to get cheaper. And that is one thing that our system, so our system is going to be able to kind of pick out those situations where a quarterback just stands to A, have a little bit more volume than his price would suggest. He's in a better situation than his price suggests, because another thing where we really, I think, crushed it around the edges last year was grabbing quarterbacks who had been on fantasy downturns over the short term, simply because they had, so the price drops, but they had run into bad, they had run into tough defenses in the short term too. Like this was crazy to see, because when we were looking at what quarterbacks we were, I wish I could remember. I remember was Phillip Rivers from last year, but I can't remember the exact thing leading into it. But he had basically played four really, really good defenses in a row, mm-hmm. and been bad, predictably so, because he was facing like the Denvers of the world that were just shutting him down. And then all of a sudden played like a team like Jacksonville. I'm not looking exactly at this game log, but I know it was some kind of situation like this. Price drops. Public perception of Rivers drops, because it looks like there's something wrong with him over the course of three or four weeks. And now all of a sudden he's going against a team that plays at a fast pace that simply cannot defend the pass. And now he looks like a fantastic play. Now, I think in that situation,
sure, winds up with the second most passing yards in the NFL last season.
Right. And I think actually in that situation, it didn't work out perfectly. So I'm not even being results oriented, but this is where our system, I think, is really good about grabbing guys along the edges, because it's not going to have a negative impression of Rivers because it looked at its game log. It doesn't care at all about that. It just says, oh my God, this guy's price has dropped, you know, 15% in the short term, and he's finally playing another bad defense, and this is where we're going to grab our most value. And we were just kind of week to week picking those guys out really, really consistently to really, really high upside.
Yeah, I think that's an absolutely great point. Matchups in football arguably are the most important from any sport, simply, well, for two reasons. So like if you take from a baseball example, you know, the sites have started adjusting if you're against an ace pitcher, right? So mm-hmm. if you're against Clayton Kershaw, everyone's really cheap, and that's fine. Except in football, there is the equivalent of playing against a Clayton Kershaw. Like maybe you're against the Broncos last year or something.
Right.
And what the sites wind up doing in many cases is not adjusting you back to your normative levels after, especially if you have a run of several games like that, which you just can if you happen to be in the wrong division. So I definitely think you want to try to divorce yourself from what happened in the previous week as much in football as in any sport. Just in the same way you wouldn't be like, Miguel Cabrera stinks, he went 0-4 against Clayton Kershaw. People definitely run into the problem of, the last 3 weeks, Phillip Rivers has, you know, had 500 total passing yards. And you're like, yeah,
right.
But still.
Right. Or the Chargers are really struggling.
They literally did place Denver, Kansas City, and I can't remember who it was, Baltimore or something last year. It definitely is. Small sample size still exists in football, big time.
Well, it's the ultimate just small sample size sport. It's so hard to pick out exactly what is true and what's not true about a football season. And sometimes you just never get there in terms of a team. Or sometimes, like what you mentioned at the beginning, is these little sort of changes along the periphery, or what would go generally unnoticed by a casual fan. Like you said, like, you know, a change in offensive linemen or a change in just overall scheme or just a subtle change. We're just not going to know those things. And so it will look like a team gets better or worse over the course of the season. And it's going to be very, very difficult to pick out what is part of a sample, what is actually true. And football is that's probably the number one biggest problem with football. But there are some things that get that regress pretty quickly. Like we can figure out what they are. Like one thing is pace. So the pace at which a team play, like a Chip Kelly team is just going to play at a much faster pace than another coach, and we kind of just know that pretty quickly. Like,
explain why that's important.
Well, it's most important because of volume, right? Because sort of like the way batting lineups matter in baseball, it matters to hit first bat rather than ninth for just obvious reasons in that you stand to get more projected plate appearances. Or same in basketball, where if you play against a team like the Lakers, or well, not the Sixers as much this year, but you know, if you play against a team that runs at a quick pace, you will just stand to have the ball in your hands more. And so a team like the Eagles, while not adjusted for pace, actually weren't like the worst defense in the world. They end up looking like it because the other team just has the ball so much, right? And so you have to factor in pace with a team because
the pace, when you say pace, you're saying like if I'm playing against the Eagles, how many possessions they're going to allow me to have over the course of the game, or how many plays they're going to allow me to run. That kind of thing?
Yeah, a team that's motivated to just run an up-tempo pace like those Chip Kelly teams were, they just got to the line, snapped the ball, and were kind of on and off the field really quickly, allowing the other team to get on and off the field really quickly. And that really matters. The teams that grind it down, like the Broncos were an example this last year, they played so slow. They ran down the clock every time. The defense was already great. When you combine those two things together, you just simply cannot play a team against the Broncos. But there are other teams where things will just sort of, you just need to see how fast the other team is playing so you know that how much your guys stand to have the ball going the other way.
Yeah, I think that's spot on. And pace is another one that it's very, very, very difficult to eyeball test. Just if you went and quizzed people on the street about the paces of various teams, I bet people would get a lot of these incorrect. So like New Orleans, for instance, you know, considered to be a high-flying offense, you would suspect they would be a top pace team. They were actually, you know, while they were very, very bad against the pass last season, they had a bottom seven pace allowed. So there's, you know, there's definitely a lot of outliers here to where, you know, and I don't want to be too promotional.
Oh, okay. Making up new words too. That's good.
Yeah. Well, I do a lot here, contrary to popular opinion, self-promotional, but this is all right inside of our new Player Lab tool. We have the pace stat just sitting there for you to poke around with, not to mention a bunch of other filters, but yeah, so pace I think is quite a good one. And I think when we're going through quarterback, I think it's also very, very important to understand, you know, where both safety and upside come from. I think a lot of people understand rightfully that looking at yards is a good place to start. And now yards obviously is going to be one of the more consistent metrics in terms of fantasy points created in a given week, simply because, again, you have so many passing attempts. You tend to throw passes for similar amounts of yards per attempt from week to week, although, you know, of course it can vary if there's a big catch here or there, and, you know, certain teams are more likely to have long passes and so on. But yards are going to be, passer yards in particular, are probably the most safe mainstream big fantasy point stat. Would you agree with that generally?
Oh, definitely, because it's the same guy doing the same things game to game, right? Like it's that guy is taking the snaps and that is the quarterback that is going to sort of control his own fate. And teams run.
He doesn't need to worry about like someone else gets the snaps in the red zone.
Or no. Like, you know, and teams.
Like the nonsense we need to worry about in every other position.
In general, teams' goal of attack or plan of attack doesn't change too dramatically over the course of a season. A team that throws, you know, X amount of times as opposed to running X amount of times per game, that doesn't really diverge too much for a given team on a week-to-week basis. Most teams,
well, and I'd say just the only caveat there is relative to the spread they're in, right? So like, you know, assuming a similar game spread, obviously if a team is favored against the Browns, like say a bad team like Jacksonville last year, say they're favored against the Browns 1 week and then they're playing the Patriots the next week, like they might change their game script pretty dramatically. But yeah, by and large, over the course of a whole season, you're going to see a lot of similar performances out of the quarterback position.
I might just be speaking off the cuff here. I would say I generally agree with that, and I don't want to take this as law, but I would suspect that the game script changes more late game than it does early. Like a team will stick to what it does well, and it just depends if they're able to get out in that lead, and then the script will change. You know what I mean? So like a team like the Patriots, they just kind of tend to keep their foot on the gas the whole time anyway. But
And they use their short passing game as a de facto running game in a lot of ways.
Exactly. And so like that game script piece where they're running, maybe again, I think we're probably referring to like running out the clock in this case. So with the run game, I think that only gets there once the rest of their team their team goals have already been accomplished, which is crush the other team, right? And so that's where, yeah, I think the script matters, but I don't think it matters like from snap one. I think it probably plays itself out a little bit more at the end of the game if they're able to even get there.
Yeah, and worth noting too, when it comes to passing yards, last season, the top, so you had Drew Brees through the most total passing yards, and then 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Then you go down to number 10 at Kirk Cousins, or even 11 at Jameis Winston, who threw, you know, 800 less passing yards. But 800 passing yards over the course of a season is only about 2 fantasy points per game. So keeping in mind that passing yards are just worth less than rushing or receiving yards as well means that getting really deep dive on how many passing yards a guy's going to get in a given week, well, you certainly want to know. Like, there's a big difference between Drew Brees and Joe Flacco or Tyrod Taylor or something. Generally speaking, you can find safety in passing yards without digging too deeply, I guess is my big point there. So that leads us to, well, where actually can we find an edge? You know, if many people are going to do a reasonable job at projecting out passing yards, or if they make a mistake where it won't be a big problem, where can we find our bigger edge? And for us, that comes down to projecting out touchdowns, actually. Now, touchdowns are obviously quite a bit more erratic, but they're obviously quite a bit higher impact as well, each touchdown being worth 6 points. And the disparity between touchdown throwers is actually just a little bit bigger than it is for passing yards. So last season, you know, you had Tom Brady at the top with 36, and then you had 4 guys at 35 touchdowns. Well, once you get down in that 11-12 range, you have guys with around 29 touchdowns, and then it falls off a cliff. You get down to 25, then in the low 20s, and then even in the teens in some cases. This winds up being a pretty dramatic difference. So from Brady at number 1 to Rivers at 11, 7 touchdowns, or about 2.6 fantasy points per game. So right away you see that's, you know, quite a bit larger than the 1.75 to 2 we were talking in passing yards. So while that's not, you know, a huge, huge, huge difference, it's still a difference. And it's still definitely worth noting. I think a common misperception among sort of, again, season-long fantasy analysts for quite a long time is that touchdowns are essentially random. Like, you should just look at how many touchdowns a team scores and, you know, kind of go from there and kind of divide it up equally amongst the players you're considering. Nothing could frankly be further from the truth. You know, I put a series of charts in the ebook each year. I update the major chart from the season before, which just outlines essentially the number of opportunities teams take in the red zone versus the number of conversions they have to touchdowns. And interesting things kind of bubble to the surface. The first thing that's happened both years that I've run these correlations is that the most highly correlated thing with passing touchdowns is actually pass attempts in the red zone. So if you are a team that A, gets to the red zone a lot, and B, passes when you get there, that's the most likely way to project out future touchdowns. And it works pretty solidly. I mean, every year we'll have some outlier teams that just get in there and, you know, for whatever reason, convert a ton of their passing attempts into touchdowns when they get down there. I think last year, the big outlier here was Detroit. They converted, they had only 70 passing attempts in the red zone, but had 27 touchdowns. So a regression candidate, frankly, for me, because they don't have any real reason to be so much better at that than everyone else now. But yeah, so just getting down there in the first place and then passing when you get there is really, really what we want to be keeping track of. I would say, generally speaking, coming into this season, most teams will probably do something similar to what they did last year, unless there's been huge coaching changes or big personnel changes. But by and large, that's the chart I'm going to be using moving forward into this season.
And I think a lot of those changes that we're looking at, you know, we're still a little bit away from week one, so we're not going to make any true distinctions about who to play and who not to play here. But a lot of the big change teams are guys that we're probably are going to be fine just taking a wait and see approach on anyway, right? So, you know, Houston and Denver and Cleveland and LA, teams that are putting basically new quarterbacks either, you know, from the draft or from just a switch in free agency. Those are probably all, for safety purposes, stayaways anyway. So I think when we're looking at those stats for the known commodities, you know, the Cam Newtons, Tom Brady's, blah, 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 of the world. Well, not Tom Brady, he's suspended. Cam Newtons and Aaron Rodgers and Russell Wilson's of the world. We can pretty much know what their plan of attack is going to be down in the red zone. And I think those numbers do carry year over year, just because not too much about those teams has changed.
Yeah, and occasionally you'll get a a big change, like Jimmy Graham leaving New Orleans. New Orleans did take a step back in terms of converting red zone passes to touchdowns last season. But generally speaking, I think you're pretty clearly correct there. Normally in football, unlike other sports, huge name players, huge impact players tend just not to switch teams very often,
yep.
at least at the skill positions. And when they do, it often isn't as significant as many people think. Like, scheme makes up for a lot of the perceived difference between one guy and another. One thing worth noting, and this was a study or an inquiry done by Chris Raybon at 444, where he looked into just the number of touchdowns scored, both in the red zone and then from the 49 to 20 yard lines on the opposing side. And in the red zone, well, teams score 66% of all touchdowns inside the red zone, and then another 25% are scored in opposing territory from the 49 to the 20. So 91% of all touchdowns are just scored in opposing territory. So again, offenses that move the ball are just going to put you in a better position to score touchdowns. And so saying things like, you know, hey, it's going to turn around for St. Louis this season. Like, they ran bad on touchdowns last year. Well, they didn't run that bad because they only passed 34 total times in the red zone. So don't hold your breath if you think that they're going to magically turn it around. You know, given that they have Todd Gurley and not a great passing attack.
And good for news for them, they're not even playing in St. Louis anymore. So now we can call them by a new team. The
Oh yeah, good call. They're still St. Louis in all our charts. Damn it.
It's all right. I think people forgive forgive it. But yeah, so I think so we've done a sort of a longer conversation here about quarterbacks. It's one of those things where we could probably spend 5 podcasts just talking about it because we didn't even drill too much down onto the player level. We'll get a little bit more into this as we get closer to the season and we start evaluating specific matchups for different quarterbacks and what we're looking for in a given one. We're not really there yet. We're still time away as we get, you know, within 5 to 6 days of the NFL season and all of our information has become a little more clear. We'll start breaking down individual players and what we think or like or dislike about their matchups going into a specific game. Because again, that's what we're here to do. We're not here to take the season long view. We're here to simply say player X we think is a good play or a medium play or a bad play against team Y for these reasons. And as we get closer to the season, we'll start drilling down onto that player to player level.
Yeah, I think it'll be great to, once we start breaking down individual matchups, one thing we probably won't do as much is, you know, go, here's what to expect out of New Orleans, here's what to expect out of Chicago going into this season, just because, again, from the season-long perspective, we're not super, super interested. It's not probably totally worth our time. Much more interesting is looking at matchups on a week-to-week basis, and I think giving this overall level of process at the different positions, this is a good start on football. You can get a little bit more information by checking out that article that will go live today, and I think we'll probably wind up putting these all in one, you know, concentrated strategy area, but definitely keep your eye out. We're going to run more of these for each position and then, you know, some higher level strategy stuff as well before we actually get into matchups. So I look forward to circling back around then.
Yeah, my eyes are blurry from looking at the running back stuff, which will go up hopefully tomorrow, but I can't promise. All right, that is it for us today. DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, DFSR.com for short. You head over, like I said, take a look at James' article on QBs that's going up today. We also have NFL content from a couple days before that we're going to start running pretty much every day from now till the start of the season, plus baseball, obviously. And you can grab a free, two-week trial to our projection system powered by Lineup Lab, which has optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings, plus our brand new Player Lab, which helps you filter for a lot of the different things that we were just discussing in this podcast that we think are important when evaluating a quarterback play and really every other position as well. Free for 2 weeks and then $29.95 a month after that. It gets you all set for NFL. MLB is included in the same sub. All right, buddy, be back again, I think, tomorrow talking a little running backs. Yeah, anything else from you?
Nah, man. Thanks
a
lot.
All right, see you guys later.